We are Rogue Media Sports.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. An hour or so after the Cowboys win 41-21 in convincing fashion over the Philadelphia Eagles. And Ed Werder joining me, coming back from the West Coast. He's been all over the country watching these great Panthers. And boy, then he was out there on the West Coast. He flies in time for the Cowboys tonight to watch this thing. And Ed, I would say that all in all, this was everything the Cowboys could have hoped for. This thing was all academic. I guess the Eagles, you might call it 27-14 when they finally went down there and scored in the third quarter. It briefly was in doubt, but it wasn't in doubt for long. And this Cowboys team, I think I tweeted that the NFC East race felt like it was over. Probably a little premature, but Ed, right now, this is the class of the division.
Look, the Cowboys play in the NFC East where they have Dak Prescott and the other teams have Taylor Heinicke, who's 1-2 as a starter in his career, Daniel Jones, who's 8-21 in his career, and Jalen Hurts, who fell to 2-5 as the Eagles starting quarterback. So they ought to be able to dominate this division as long as Dak Prescott remains healthy. He's played incredibly well to me in all three games. As a passer, as a leader, calling plays at the line of scrimmage. I don't think he's the runner that he was before he suffered these, the horrific leg injuries. This was his first time back at AT&T Stadium since that horrible day nearly a year ago when he suffered that fractured leg and dislocated his ankle. But other than that, he seems all the way back and entirely as good as he ever has been as the Cowboys starting quarterback. And I know we want to make this segment short, so I want to end it on something that's really captivating and unique that you might not find anywhere else. Dak Prescott's completion percentage through three games this year, 77.5%. That's the second highest through three games in the Super Bowl era behind Drew Brees, who completed 80.6% of his passes in 2018, the first 3 weeks of the season. So Dak is second to Drew Brees. He is just ahead of Russell Wilson, who is at 76.7% last year. So Dak has clearly established himself as an upper echelon quarterback and totally justified the money that Jerry Jones spent on him this offseason.
Tremendous note there to start, Ed, and that's good stuff. In the Super Bowl era, the second highest completion percentage. You know what I wish, Ed? You mentioned that dislocation of the ankle. I wish you guys at ESPN would do a little more on that. I don't know if y'all have mentioned that enough. I'd like to see just
I'll make that recommendation. Maybe I can touch on it again this weekend when I'm doing the Panthers game.
Yeah, just kind of what it was like. I think your whole angle should be, okay, you know what it was like the first time you were back out there in whatever day, 300-something days. What's the second time? The second time you were back out there like? Yeah, just focus on that.
Don't you think it's going to be, the Giants are here the week after Carolina. The Giants were the team that he suffered.
Yes.
This horrific. The images that will come flooding back and the memories that will be so debilitating for Dak Prescott when he plays against the Giants.
Meanwhile, the Giants will be 1-4 or whatever, 1-3.
You think they'll have won a game, huh?
They'll be a riff. Oh, maybe I'm giving them a win. I don't know where to find that. All right, lots more to come. Frito, please play the music. It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is a Victory Monday. We're usually talking about Victory Monday after Sunday. We're taping it Monday night, so I guess we should call it Victory Tuesday, as most of you are listening to us right now, and a tremendous outing for the Cowboys. It early on, after 7-0 lead, I mean, Ed, before we even get to what happened to make it 7-7, the really good trend for the Cowboys that's come out of the blue, I mean, you're always great at kind of remembering all these crazy things and crazy streaks, and one of the real negative streaks were the Cowboys had gone forever. It was like a two-year type span or something without scoring touchdown on their first drive, and now they've done it on their first possession, both opening drives for the offense, 2 weeks in a row. I mean, this seems like a huge leap for the Cowboys, and I think it's very important because it kind of helps set the tone.
Yeah, I thought that the execution was really good from the very start, and let's kind of put this in the context of, you know, Kellen Moore, I think, is demonstrating why Mike McCarthy yielded play calling to this assistant coach that he'd never worked with before. I mean, maybe Jerry Jones mandated it or recommended it, but Mike McCarthy seems to have embraced it, and understandably so, seeing what Kellen Moore is doing with his personnel. And, you know, it's kind of ironic that he does this tonight, maybe has, you know, one of his best games ever as a play caller, in that the Eagles had every chance to hire him when they met with him in January. He went to Florida. He met with Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, and Howie Roseman, the general manager, and they opted for Nick Sirianni, who had been the offensive coordinator under Frank Reich with the Baltimore or the Indianapolis Colts. And one of the things I think that gave Sirianni an advantage over Kellen Moore was he had the history with Frank Reich, who had been with the Eagles when they won their Super Bowl under Doug Peterson. But I wonder if they won't regret that decision, not just based on tonight, but based on sort of what happens from this point forward. Because I think Kellen Moore's done an exceptional job in all three games this year. You know, I think he's shown that they can win games. Even though they didn't win against the Bucs, I think they would have beaten almost anybody else throwing the football a majority of the time, or they can succeed doing what they have the last 2 weeks against the Chargers and the Eagles and be very balanced and run the football. I thought Ezekiel Elliott came out and ran really hard from the start. And I think they've, you know, they talked about complementary football, and we've kind of mocked McCarthy about that. Because he's never really done that before in Green Bay. He was always very quarterback oriented, but the last 2 weeks, they really have been that. And in tonight's game, I thought getting the lead early was huge. Getting a big lead was really important, because when you're playing a running quarterback like Jalen Hurts, the best thing you can do for your defense is get a lead and force the running quarterback to be a passer. And that's what they did tonight. Jalen Hurts threw 39 times in this game. And so they forced the Eagles to try to play a way that they're not going to be successful playing very often.
Yeah, if you were going to be picky on those eight plays that they had forever in the first half, is like, wait, they ran their ninth play. They didn't really, throughout some of the evening, they had trouble, whether it be Goddard or Ertz. They didn't really know where those guys were. But I think you're right. I think they did a good job against Jalen. Jalen's unique in that he does have the ability to move. He's a better running quarterback than Dak. And, you know, what's crazy about it, at the very end of the game, Ed, I know a lot of people had kind of moved on about their nights, but you and I were still, you know, we're grinding. We're taking all our notes and everything. I mean, I hope we both were. But you saw Jalen Hurts. He's running out of bounds, and he fires a pass back across the field. And again, by then, the game was over. But you see these flashes of like, God, this guy could be pretty good. But they didn't really allow the Eagles to get into anything. And he threw a horrible pick. They said maybe the receiver could have helped him out. But like early in the game, he threw a really bad pick. So I thought, Ed, also, since I like talking about in a blowout, I do like staying for a minute in the little part of the game that it was still undecided. And the fact that they gave that They gave that pass up where Dak gets hit by Hargrave and they get the touchdown. Well, the Cowboys just came kind of right back after that. I thought that was a great response. And then, you know, and we'll get into the curious behavior by Mike McCarthy at the end of the half, but the Cowboys quickly got that thing back to where it needed to be, and the Eagles never really threatened again. In fact, when it was 27-7, I thought they would never do anything again the rest of the game. They sort of, Cowboys bogged down a little bit early in the second half, but then they got it back together.
Well, I thought they had a few moments of adversity. We talked about them getting off to the fast start, and they did. But then they, you know, they had some bad things happen to them where Zeke was marked short on a play that had originally been ruled a touchdown on their second series. And then on fourth down, Dak Prescott appeared to sneak the ball across the goal line, break the plane, but he was ruled short on the field. McCarthy challenged for the first time this season, and the ruling on the field was upheld because apparently there wasn't any, you know, visual evidence to support a change, even though it certainly seemed from the overhead view that he did break the plane before he extended the ball. No clear visual evidence to overturn the call on the field. And so that created another, you know, another bad moment for the Cowboys beyond the one you talked about where they gave up a touchdown on offense to Fletcher Cox. But they did. They showed some real, you know, fortitude. I thought they were relentless in the game. I thought they were attacking on both sides of the ball really throughout. You know, they dominated the first quarter. They had 182 yards in the first quarter, the most in the first quarter of a game since 2014, when they had 213 yards against Washington. You know, I thought the Eagles were very passive. You know, they didn't show much motion on offense, and on defense, they didn't blitz Dak in the first quarter. They generated one pressure on his first 10 dropbacks. And so Dak was able to, you know, average 13 and a half yards per attempt. And the Eagles had a horrible first quarter, and the Cowboys really dominated from that point forward with a few exceptions, but they always seem like after that adversity early in the game, it seemed to me like they were always in control.
Yeah, it did. And something we'll talk a little bit about with Stretch, and I think he'll be pretty happy with his grades. Don't think there's any F's to be handed out. And I'm excited for you to get to talk to Stretch. I know he always misses you at times. We've accused him of stalling to try to get on with you. But tonight, you'll get to visit with Stretch, so that'll be fun. But you did say that we've kind of mocked McCarthy because it's not really his way. He's never been a huge guy to lean on the running game. And yet tonight, and again, a lot of this is the play caller, but still, the game plan and everything, I mean, the combo blocks, everything about how they ran the ball was pretty impressive. And Zeke ran with authority. He ran with speed. He knocked that safety out of the game immediately. Safety took him on. That was a really good collision on both of their part. But Zeke took the fight to that player, and that player never came back in the game. We hope he's fine, but that was, again, a reminder that given the opportunities, this running back is uniquely prepared and built to lean. I've heard you talk in the past, Ed, on the Doomsday Podcast, about how the quarterback used to kind of impose his will and make defenses feel him to a certain extent. This running back can do that, and he did it tonight. And we haven't always seen that lately, but I thought that was good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, it was almost like they went back to, you know, 2016 when Dak and Zeke were rookies and Dak was more of a game manager. And I mean, he's obviously a much better, more evolved player as a quarterback now than he was then, especially as a passer and in control of things at the line of the scrimmage in a way he never was as a rookie. But I thought they sort of recreated that identity tonight. You know, it was like, hey, we know we're the better team and we want to send a message to everybody in our division about what it's going to be like to play us this year. And I thought they did that through Zeke, and he's the right guy to do it through because he's the most competitive guy on the field. And the idea of, you know, obviously talked a lot this week going into the game about Tony Pollard getting more plays and taking a bigger role. And I've said, I think McCarthy probably likes Pollard as much if not more than he likes having Zeke in the game because he's a more dynamic player and he's a better receiver. But I think Zeke really showed his value in a game like you saw tonight. And during the week, he handled it so well as far as he's not jealous. He's not threatened by, you know, a teammate expanding his role to his detriment. He doesn't feel like he has to justify the money that he's making. And everybody's saying that what Jerry did was a huge mistake, and it might have been. But he's an awfully good player, and he's worth having. And I've said he's not gonna win any more rushing titles under Mike McCarthy. Not gonna get the chance.
Yeah.
But he can still be a valuable part of a winning franchise, and I think he underscored that tonight.
It was suggested in print and on TV that maybe this week Pollard, because of the production and per carry that he was having and how productive he'd been, that it really maybe he should get even more of a chance and had perhaps even challenging Zeke. And I like Zeke's answer. I don't know if you heard this. It may have been when they turned the cameras off tonight. Ed, he said his quote was, "No one reads Kalishaw anyway." I don't know if he said that, but I wish he had of. But yeah, it's interesting. That was good. It was good by them. This tight end continues to get things done. And Ed, on the other side of the ball, I mean, I think it speaks very highly of Dan Quinn, and you've all and you're we're going to bring some of those things up with Stretch as well, Glenn Stretch Smith, but. Just the fact that you could tell what they're doing is a lot more sound in the fact that this Bradley Anae had was sort of becoming a nice player. Well, he's in COVID protocols. Oh, and he has COVID, you know, all this kind of stuff. So he's been in protocols and he's out and they're already missing DeMarcus Lawrence. They've had to take their rookie linebacker and move him to defensive end, you know, to become more of a pass rusher.
Dorrance Armstrong's out.
And yet they were extremely productive and they seem to have a heck of a cornerback in Trayvon Diggs. In fact, this is the first time that they've had a player have interceptions in, have interceptions in the first three games of a season since Everson Walls.
Who led the NFL in interceptions as a rookie with like 11.
Correct.
But yeah, you know, I know I've obviously covered Dan Quinn a lot when he was in Seattle as a defensive coordinator in the Legion of Boom years when they were going to Super Bowls, you know, playing Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in the biggest game of the year. Winning one, losing one. When he was a head coach and took the Falcons to the Super Bowl, lost to Tom Brady there in a game that it should have never happened that way. Wasn't entirely his fault. But I know that he was excited about coming to Dallas, that he felt like this was the place where he could make the biggest difference. And I think he's created a whole different attitude on defense. And, you know, the Cowboys made a commitment to him and maybe to themselves as an organization that, hey, we're dedicating this draft, and they use their first six picks for the first time in history, all on defensive players, acquired eight defensive players in the draft, the most in history. They were involved in free agency in a way they'd never been in 30 years of free agency, and half the players they signed were defensive players. And so I think that they've acquired superior athletes through the draft and free agency. And with Dan Quinn, they've got a fast, aggressive defense. And on top of all that, what we're seeing already is they have depth. They have flexibility. And they do have ball hawks. I mean, he talked about, you know, changing the way the defensive player was built. He wanted, you know, long levered guys with long arms and angular bodies, ball hawk mentality. And I think we're seeing all that play out right now. I mean, he inherited Trayvon Diggs, but Trayvon Diggs is one of those guys. And it's interesting, you know, Trayvon Diggs' brother, Stephon Diggs, is a wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, plays with Josh Allen, led the NFL in receiving last year. He's got as many touchdowns as his brother. And he's a cornerback. So he's got three already at 3-3 games. And the Cowboys have eight takeaways this season that leads the NFL. We know at this point last year, they were horrible. They couldn't take the ball over, and they were turning it over left and right. That's their most takeaways through three games since 2007. Eight takeaways in three games, the most since 2007. Last year, they didn't get their eighth takeaway until week 11, their 10th game. They've only played three games. and so guys like Micah Parsons, Odighizuwa had a sack and a half tonight. First rookie Cowboy defender with a more than one sack in a game since Malik Collins in 2016. So, yeah, big. They're having great success early on. And this is where they need to make their run. This is where they need to create their identity on both sides of the ball. They need to come out of this three-game homestand at 4-1. They don't play – I don't think they play another playoff team from last year until Thanksgiving, or at least until they go play the Chiefs sometime in November. So they need to make the most of this opportunity right now. And so far, it seems like they are.
Although my guy Matt Rhule is coming to town, watch out for the Carolina Panthers. By the way, is it weird still for you? Like, I have to kind of like, even though I kind of know, obviously, who to be looking for, to see a cornerback wearing number 7. Is that visually weird to you? Like, even when he had his pick 6 tonight, I for a moment I was like, wait, who? And then it's like Diggs. The single digit stuff, even for Jalen Smith. Yeah.
I associate him with 27, you know, and it was interesting that before week one, Tom Brady made a big issue of this rule change, allowing, you know, players to wear any number, that it makes it more difficult for the defense, for the quarterback to identify who's playing what position and who's rushing and all those things. And maybe that's helping Diggs out too, but yeah, it's a little odd to see him in wearing number 7.
Yeah. Eagles had a number 2 tonight, and I thought it like hurt him. Like, for some reason, I just thought it was really making him play poorly, wearing number 2. All right, Ed, let's discuss just the two of us, and then we'll let Stretch weigh in on this. But another head-scratching moment, I think you're going to introduce kind of a weekly segment coming up. But
Well, we can.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like that. I like that. And we'll see.
Well, we'll do it until it doesn't make sense to do it.
Yeah, yeah. But so far, it has made complete sense. But it was. But we'll tease that. It'll be coming up with Stretch. But what a weird deal that was. To there, the Eagles are, and they're in a third and long situation. And even after second down, you start thinking they're fairly deep in their territory. Cowboys up 20-7. Cowboys have a couple of timeouts left. Eagles are in bad shape. No timeout. Then there's no timeout again. And then as it's fourth down and 5, the clock's at like 45 seconds. And you pointed it out, the official goes over and stands next to McCarthy, kind of like, all right, I'm here for you, Mike.
You need me. Let me know.
Whenever you need me.
Stop the clock.
And McCarthy, I think he got caught up in some sort of weird standoff with Sirianni, like maybe they might go for it here. Maybe the Eagles are so desperate at their own 45 or near midfield, they're just going to go for it. Or maybe they were like about the 40-yard line, and he never called the timeout. It's almost like a stubborn thing. Peyton Manning on the mega cast, he and Eli, they're both sitting there, and Peyton's begging him, Mike, call the timeout. Like, it's at some point, this quarterback now has enough juice in this organization to overrule this dude. Romo used to do that occasionally, I feel like. I mean, at some point,
I'm
you
not
just
sure
got
to. Well, that worked out.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, anyway,
here's the thing. You know, Mike McCarthy's been coaching in the NFL. What's this? His 15th year as a head coach in the NFL. 13 years in Green Bay, 2 years now in Dallas. And, you know, he's to the point in his career where he's not calling plays. He doesn't call the plays on offense. He doesn't call the plays on defense. So the place where he can make the biggest difference is in game strategy, management of, you know, situations, risk assessment. And after the game tonight, he simply explained that he was content with the lead that they had at halftime, didn't want to take any chances. In other words, he didn't want to take a timeout and have the Eagles convert and then put together a drive that would cost him points. So he didn't use his two timeouts. I thought it was a totally missed opportunity at a time when you were totally dominating the game and had a chance to really put them away, especially knowing that they're going to get the ball first in the second half. obviously what he was afraid of, and this to me was a decision totally motivated by fear. He was afraid of they're going to score at the end of the first half after we dominated the whole game, and then they're going to get the ball back and they're going to score at the start of the second half, and we're going to be tied, behind, close, whatever. I'm just going to take 20-7 to the locker room. And sometimes doing that would probably be okay. But in this case, as far as they had to go, as backed up as they were, and as ineffective as they'd been on offense, it made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. And it's not like the Cowboys had any trouble moving the ball. And if you just watched the night before, Aaron Rodgers, he had no timeouts, and he had 35 seconds and or 37 seconds, and they went and won a ball game. And you're saying, and they got a kicker who's capable of hitting a 60-yard field goal. In fact, this guy loves trying long field goals. I mean, McCarthy was born to try those field goals.
And your defense was in control of their offense. They couldn't run it. They weren't throwing it. They did make a big gain on the third and 20, third 25, whatever they had there. So they had fourth and five. But if you get the ball back, I mean, you could trust Dak Prescott to take care of the football. He's always been very mindful of that part of the game. I just thought it made no sense. And maybe if it was, this was the first and only time this has happened, it wouldn't be such a big deal, but it's happened in every game this year. And it happened in many games last year, including the game against Washington on Thanksgiving Day at home, where it kind of ended their season. You know, I think at the time, he acted like he was playing the Chiefs. He was playing Washington. Washington couldn't score.
Yeah.
And the Eagles weren't going to score. So I thought it was a poor decision on his part. He's not admitting that. He's saying that he was content with the lead he had, and sometimes that's the right decision. In this case, I don't think it was, and I think me and Peyton Manning could win any argument against Mike McCarthy.
I think we don't like to mention this. Boy, you and I both, I think, probably watched as much as the Ryder Cup as we could and love it, but there is something that happens to all of us who love the great game of golf. You get the yips. I think you can get the coaching yips, and I think once you get criticized – over and over for something, I think he freezes up a little bit. And I think he's over there, you know, trying to make a decision. And I think he froze up to a certain extent.
Well, I thought it was a bad decision, and that's where he can most affect the game in a positive way. And if he doesn't do it better than that, quite honestly, it's gonna cost this team a game or games in a critical situation where he makes a bad decision.
Yeah. And some coaches do have people in their ear who actually help them with game management. And Frito, have you counted how many times Ed's dropped something during this podcast? It's the damnedest thing I've ever watched. What do you keep dropping?
People who can't see, these are my notes.
Okay.
These are my notes. It's like, you know, 15 pages
okay,
of notes.
Hey, okay. I love the notes.
And I put them down on the ground when I think I'm done with them. Oh. And then I thought, oh, there was one thing I wanted back on page one.
Okay.
I'm saving for later.
I just kind of
like that. I know you like to have that strong thing at the end. And so I've just decided what it is. And it was on a page that I already put away.
Nice. Okay, I thought it was like you're dropping your pen over and over again. you never have to worry about me dropping notes. All right, it is.
Or hints.
It is the Matt Mosley. I'm not doing my radio show. It's the Doomsday Podcast. I'm sorry.
You could use some notes.
I do this. I sometimes have a split personality. Okay. It's time for what we like to call stretch plays with former Cowboys coach and scout Glenn Stretch Smith. A lot of times Ed is working the locker rooms after these games. Ed just was at a Thursday night game, was at a Sunday game, and ESPN let him at least, after he got home tonight, watch this from the house. So we are very happy to have Ed while we do the Glenn Stretch Smith segment here. And that's why, Ed, I'm going to let you lead us off and take Stretch wherever you would like to take him to start here.
Well, it's interesting, right? I've covered the Cowboys in Tampa this year. I've covered the Cowboys in Los Angeles, but when they're home, I don't cover them. But anyway, it was good to get see this team from a different perspective, and I'll be back at Jerry World on Sunday for the Panthers game. But as it pertains to this game, I think there's a lot of interesting areas that Stretch can analyze. And while I am tempted to start with the offense, I think I want to start with the defense. You know, they have a lot of injuries on that side of the ball, and yet Stretch, I think we see a defense that's different in attitude under Dan Quinn, and a completely different defense in terms of athleticism. What was your appraisal of the defense?
Well, I see guys chasing the ball, taking angles. I see guys really getting up the field. And I'm talking about it doesn't matter who's rushing the passer, because I could sit here and go through Bohanna, Urban, Basham. I mean, guys, and you know, you're going to sound like an owl. Just go, who? But, I mean, they're guys that get up the field, that understand how to stay in their rush lanes. And, I mean, you think about this team without Dorrance Armstrong and without, without Lawrence.
Marcus Lawrence.
Yeah, Marcus Lawrence. And you start saying, you know, they didn't put any pressure on the quarterback. Yet I felt like every time he went back to throw it tonight, I mean, there was some heat on him. Now, here's the flip side, guys, from an overall standpoint, and that's, hey, there were a few drives where they just turned the tight end loose, and you go, golly, this is starting to look like some of the Mike Nolan stuff. But I tend to give that a little bit of a pass in this situation where you've got, you know, where you've got Parsons in there all the time. Hell, he lined him up as a three technique in there, and he was getting after it. So I tend to kind of give him a little leeway in that situation. It concerns me a little bit, that they were letting the tight end go. But I tell you what, when you look at the coverages that they play, I think the leverage that they play with tonight, when you saw Diggs on the interception, he's playing outside leverage, knowing that it's a cut split. Well, it's a cut split. I love a guy thinking, hey, if he's cut his split, guess where he's probably going? He's probably going outside. He's cut his split for a reason. He broke on it and picked the ball off and went and scored with it. So I just see guys playing – and with different leverage. I see guys playing with a different sense of urgency. I see guys running and taking angles and getting to the football. And I think all of those things lead to turnovers and what you want to see from a Dallas defense that, like you were saying, I mean, it's playing with a bunch of guys that nobody's even heard of.
All right. We usually have you give grades for the different positions and different units there. I will just start out with one player, though, and I think you're going to give him an A. But for the first time in a long time, and I'll even include Byron Jones in this because I Byron Smith. Anyway, he's been gone for a while now. I'm forgetting his name.
It's Byron Jones.
Yeah. Okay. Jones, okay. Yeah. We were okay for at first. This is one of the most dominant cornerback, some of the most dominant cornerback play we've seen in a long time from Trayvon Diggs. And it just breaking on the ball, the pick six. This guy seems to be playing with extreme confidence. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, yeah, and like I was saying, I think he plays with great leverage. I think he understands the game. And then you see him go over when he goes, you know, and they go corners over, and he goes inside to play the slot. And then they break on the, you know, they break on the dig. He breaks up underneath the dig. There's so many things to me that you're starting to see a guy that from his first year to his second year, he's making that leap. He's understanding the read and recognition of that. And I'm going to go and tell you that I loved what I saw from Kazee. I loved what I saw from Malik Hooker. I mean, guys that are breaking on the football, knowing that, hey, maybe they've seen that in practice during the week. Maybe they've seen that particular route. It really looked, you know, it looked that way. And so I'm going across the board with a defensive secondary that, quite frankly, I mean, I have to give an A to.
It sounds like you suggested now in both responses to our questions about the defense, like this defense is far better coached under Dan Quinn than it was under Mike Nolan, who I think he wanted to fire by this time last year. three weeks into the season, I think it actually was 3 weeks into the season when Mike McCarthy was talking about, hey, we need to cut back on the volume of what we're asking these guys to do on defense. And that to me was the first troubling sign. And then soon after, if not maybe a little bit before, you were urging that this man be have his coaching career come to an end, which it has. What did you think about the defensive line tonight?
Well,
grade wise.
Yeah. They played so hard and they play so hard. And I don't like to grade effort. I really don't, because when you're on that side of the ball, that's really what you're supposed to do. Go find another color jersey and knock the crap out of them. And that's what you see these guys do all the time. And it doesn't matter who they put in the game. So, I mean, I gave that group an A. I just think what you saw out of a bunch of guys that nobody even expected to get much playing time was an absolute great effort. And, you know, when you cause Lane Johnson to get multiple holding penalties, that tells me you get your butt up the field and you're causing. I don't care if it was late in the game. You know, he's a heck of a tackler. And it's, you know, when that guy has to grab hold of you, those are guys playing with great effort and great intensity. And I mean, I have to give that group an A.
And the drafting, like of Odighizuwa, that they're already seeing really good things from him. I mean, he's been
second half tonight.
Yeah, I he's been a standout. Now, we may all have to apologize a little bit. Jalen Smith has been for the better part of two seasons now has been a season and a half at least. A lot of criticism was all over the field tonight. I thought did a good job on Jalen Smith, Van Der Esch, even with Keanu Neal out. The linebacker core, they were missing a few folks, and then Micah moving to different position. What did you think of that linebacker play from a grade standpoint?
Yeah, I thought, you know, anytime you could put Jalen in there and let him be kind of the spy on Jalen Hurts, you know, that's playing to his strength. I mean, he shows you that he still can run. I mean, he needs the angle, but he took good angles tonight, did a great job there. I thought Van Der Esch, you know, put in a workmanlike effort. And you have to put, you know, I'd like to say Parsons and grade him as a defensive lineman because of what he did, but really he's a linebacker. And I would have given that group a B, except Micah Parsons is such an outstanding player. I mean, you got to give that group an A. And I think you got an incredible effort from a defense tonight that was down players and was down guys. And I love the attitude of saying, hey, it doesn't matter. You know, we always hear it's the next man up, whatever, whatever. You've heard all the sayings, but right now they're buying in to what Dan Quinn is saying. And I tell you what, I'll make this statement back to Ed. And I know Ed understands this. If this defense continues to play this way, he's going to be back in the talk for a head coaching job in the National Football League.
Maybe this one. Maybe the Dallas head coaching job. I mean,
you're not going to draw me offside, so I understand what you said.
At the end of the season, Jerry could be looking at, do I replace Mike McCarthy 2 years into a 5-year deal, or do I let Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn go someplace else and be a head coach?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, could you understand what happened at the half?
No.
Wait. Well, let's just hold off on the coaching, because I think that's the one place we might still get a D or an F. And this time, Mike McCarthy might get such a grade on his report card that he doesn't want to take home to the family, even without the help of John Fossil this time. I mean, this might have been a totally, you know, earned by one man bad grade. But first, we have to deal with the offense. And Matt, I'll let you start with that.
Okay, let's start with the offensive line. In fact, one particular member of the offensive line, well, actually, Connor Williams got a couple of holding penalties, and Biadasz, three, and Biadasz got blown up a couple of times inside, number 97 for the Eagles.
Hargrave, who
caused that the big whatever that was, a pick six or fumble by Dak. What did you think overall, though, of the offensive line? The other three players seem to be okay.
Mosley, you know, I enjoy when you sit out the segment because you're worried about the Baylor Bears beating Iowa State, crying out loud, and you're getting your names mixed up. You're getting your number of penalties mixed up. Ed's having to correct you, and he's over there ha-haing and hee-heeing like he's in the front car of the runaway man's train. Yeah, you got three holding penalties. But that can happen when you're – I mean, when you've got no help and you're over maybe the best defensive tackle in football you know, that can happen. I thought the offensive line overall really did a hell of a job. And I'll tell you something. When you have a quarterback that's taking control of this offense, he's changing the play at the line of scrimmage all the time. I'm not seeing a lot of bust up there. When a guy gets beat physically, that's part of that. That's part of the game. I mean, the other guys, they're on scholarship too. And so I don't tend to ding him for getting the three holding calls. Biotis getting bull rushed inside, I don't tend to ding that a lot. I think I'm more inclined to say, hey, did they get their hat? And were they blocking the correct scheme, the correct leverage? Were they taking great angles? Were they protecting? And I want to tell you something, all of that is yes. And this, when you look at the depth that this group has in being able to play Steele in there and understanding that he got all that experience last year when they didn't, you know, when they weren't able to play Collins. I mean, I don't even see that big of a drop off. I love Lyle Collins. I wish he'd quit, you know, smoking dope to the damn world looks flat, but I love the fact that they have depth and they're able to put Steele in there and do that. And I got to give that group a B+, and they would absolutely get an A, you know, minus the holding calls.
Well, Leo Kyle is a very generous man. Lets his backup play almost every week.
He got his suspension reduced from 5 to 2, and it was like he was playing Chisholm Bop on his fingers. I don't want 2. All right, 5 again. To hell with it.
Yeah.
So what was your grade on the offensive line? I didn't quite
get it. I gave him a B+.
Okay. And one thing that works well in conjunction with an offensive line that's grading out at a B+ is the running game. And I thought this was, again, a game where they faced a lot of 2-deep zone on defense like they did against the Chargers. And they came out, tried to establish the run in that situation. I thought Zeke ran with a real ferocity tonight. I mean, I think he's one of the most competitive guys on the team, but he had a different mindset, I thought, tonight. Finishes 17 carries, 95 yards, 2 touchdowns. Tony Pollard contributes 11 carries, 60 yards. I think they use those guys really well. What's your grade there at the running back position?
And you make a great point. I mean, they play them some together. I think they're a really good match for one another. I mean, you got a guy that's a downhill inside runner. You got a guy who can run stretch, who can run outside zone, who can run those kind of things. And Zeke, I mean, you make the point. I mean, he was finishing the run every single time. I saw him, again, do some things from a passing game standpoint. He's a great blocker, and I gave the running backs an A.
All right. Now, Eagles safety came up early in the game and tried to take him on, and that guy never came back and was ruled out of the game. And I don't know if there's who knows if that was a shoulder or whatever, but that guy took the worst end of that. Okay, wide receivers and tight ends. Schultz, who we used to think was just kind of there was a time we thought that was kind of a wasted pick, wasn't even that great of a blocker, wasn't huge in the passing game. And my goodness, if he hasn't become like the lead tight end for this team.
I'm going to tell you, I was very critical of that pick when they first made it, because I didn't think he had enough, lead in his rear end to block the end man on the line of scrimmage. But what I like is that the coordinator plays to his strength. And I mean, he's always kind of on the backside, or he always kind of gets booted too. They're not asking him to do a lot of physical inline blocking. And so when you look at how the tight ends play, I mean, they're really two really good football players. They're smart. They get lined up. They know where to go. I love this receiving core. Now, you want to talk about depth. I mean, I don't think anybody's even saying, well, boy, I wish we had Gallup back. I mean, I wish Gallup was back. I mean, Cedric Wilson's playing. I mean, Noah Brown got in the game tonight. They've got depth there. And I think that's what makes this football team so very dangerous. And I gave that group a B+.
B+.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Go ahead. I was just gonna say that Amari Cooper, he's had more catches, more yards, more touchdowns against the Eagles than any other team. But tonight he was really a non-factor in the game. 3 catches for 26 yards. CeeDee Lamb had 3 catches for 66. But you look at the tight ends. There were 9 balls thrown to the tight ends. There were 7 balls thrown to the 2 starting receivers and 4 more to Cedric Wilson. There were 4 balls thrown to the running back. So really incorporated everybody into the passing game without really highlighting any one position group.
I'm sorry. You made the point earlier, though. I mean, when they're playing a 2 deep shell, they're keeping it in front of them. You've got to go attack them running the football, and then you've got to play action off of that. And a lot of times they're going to be able to take somebody out of the game. And I think that's what you saw the Chargers do. I think you saw the Chargers say, we're not going to let this quarterback throw for 400. And I think you saw the Eagles try to do some of the same things. They were disguising their coverages, and they got caught in man some, but boy, I mean, I'm telling you right now, the Dallas offense, I mean, you're having to pick your poison what you want to do when you come in to play them. And what I love is they continue to expand the offense, putting the damn offensive lineman in there at fullback, putting CD 2 weeks ago at running back, at week 1 at running back, and allowing him to run the football inside. I think there's so many different things that Kellen Moore continues to do to expand on this playbook, and it's doing nothing but helping, those guys, those outside guys, and causing other guys to get out. I mean, I'm talking about causing other defensive coordinators to bring guys down in the box, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to bring guys down in there to sniff this run out. When they do, you got to hit the home run.
All right, real quickly here.
The quarterback, right?
Yeah, let's do that, and then we want to get your take. Ed brought it up on some of that coaching tomfoolery at the end of the first half. Quarterback play, what did you very efficient game.
Yeah, I wish he hadn't. I wish he would have got rid of the ball down there in the end zone. I that's the one thing that frustrated me a little bit is I think that he kind of hangs on to it. But I tell you what, you saw him tonight when he hit Cedric Wilson on that inside, I call it a glance route. It's almost a skinny inside, skinny post. He's getting the confidence to put that back foot in the ground and absolutely let it rip. But because of that, because of the turnover, I'm giving him a B+.
I got to tell you on that turnover in the end zone that cost him their first touchdown, it looked to me like he was going to go quick to CeeDee Lamb off the left side, and Lamb kind of fell coming out of his route, and he had to double clutch, and that's why the ball came out.
Yeah, and it did look to me that way too. And then the other thing that kind of frustrated me a little bit was on the fourth down, he waited forever. I mean, he had Lamb right now on the slant, then he kind of booted out of there, and then ended up finding Cedric Wilson in the back. So I just think that it's hard for me to give a guy an A in that situation. So that's a grade he's getting. And I'm not grading it on a curve tonight, Ed, but thanks for asking.
And now for the funnest part of the grades, I think on a weekly basis is the, what I'm going to call the Mike McCarthy head scratcher of the week. And as I said, this time he had John Fossil, as far as I know, was not even on the sideline. He was not implicated in this one, but at the end of the half, you have, in my mind, you have a commanding lead. Your players have demonstrated physical dominance. And I thought Mike McCarthy played scared. Didn't use one of his 2 timeouts with the Eagles backed up 3rd and long. Didn't use it when it was 4th and 5. Thought he cost his team a chance for possession at the end of the half. And I thought that was important with the Eagles getting the ball first coming out. What'd you think of that decision?
Well, I thought, okay, well, it kind of was one of those things where I'll say, all right, you scratch your head. I kind of scratch my ass. I was like, God, what is that? And then the thing that bothered me, though, was then he's got a chance to go up by 16. It's 4th and 4. And he hits the gas in a situation that, It's like, why would you hit the gas there but not hit the gas at the end of the half? And I drew the analogy that, you know, I mean, I like to play blackjack, and it's like you kind of have to know what the players around the table are going to do. He's a guy that might double down on 16 with a damn dealer showing a king, and he might not hit – you know, he might not hit he might not hit 11 with the dealer showing a 10. He might just say to hell with it. I mean, it's just like, whoa, what am I dealing with here? So I'm not sure that, you know, that I even know what's going on. And sometimes I get to thinking it's, you know, it was the temperature was in the 80s. And I mean, maybe he's got that jacket on and he's just not getting enough air or something. I don't know what, to say about that.
I was worried he couldn't find the clock. He hadn't.
That was the week before's explanation for an astoundingly bad decision. Let's go. I mean, and the official was like right next to him at the sideline, so sure that at some point McCarthy didn't ask him to take the time. Hey, Mike, you got two of these. You know, you don't get five in the second half if you don't use them now. Even Peyton Manning was criticizing it on the ESPN megacast. But so the Cowboys have, to me, done something insanely stupid at the end of the half or at the end of the game every week this season. The 60-yard field goal in Tampa, the end of the game, whatever that was, before Zuerlein kicked the game winner from 56 yards last week that Matt was referring to with him claiming he couldn't see the clock. And now these two bizarre decisions. You're right, there was really two. He could have made it a three-score game, and he didn't. He lucked out. Dak extended a play and threw the touchdown pass on the back line to Cedric Wilson. So he got lucky in that case. But I think those kinds of decisions are going to cost you a game or maybe multiple games at some point.
When you make the point, I mean, when you hit the trifecta in the first three games of just FUBAR and the clock, I'd say that at some point you kind of have to say, where is the consistency with what I, who is he listening to? Is it the guy that was the head coach of the Giants? I know he's kind of a silent assistant here. Is that Ben McAdoo? Is that who he's listening to? Because I saw him kind of look at the clock and the officials looking at him like a, you know, like a mule looking at a new gate. And he's kind of going, I don't know. He just kind of gritted his teeth, wore a layer of enamel off his teeth and goes, no, I'm not going to do it. Well, all right. But I was kind of like, okay, if that's what you're going to do there, but there's no consistency with it. So I don't know. I it's hard to figure out.
I think,
and there were similar blunders last year. So it's more than a habit, I think, at this point. So what's your coaching grade?
I'm going to have to let him have a curve right here and give him a D, but it is hard.
they won 41-21, and you're giving them a D.
I'm giving them a D because you can't be a dipstick managing the clock. You know what I mean? I don't give a damn what the score was. They can win in spite of.
So he's only getting a D because Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore pulled that grade up.
I think you drew him into that D.
Ed in college would have been a hell of a teacher's assistant. He'd done a hell of a job for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Ed's always made a good assistant. Okay.
I'd be like a mule looking at a new game.
Hey, real quick, while we still have you, I did want to say it because you like it when I do this with you, Stretch. Summer went by fast, but there's always more time to catch up with friends, whether it's cookout, some of the things you like to do out at your house, Stretch, out there in Tarrant County, in the pool, whatever county that is. I don't know if it's Tarrant or you're even further.
Parker, Mosley.
Yeah, Parker County. Yeah, out there, Aledo direction. Miller Lite is the perfect drink for just doing you and simply having a great tasting light beer. Grab your friends and kick back with some Miller Lite. Stretch, do you remember those times when you had some Miller Lite with good friends of yours?
Yeah, you know, I've had a good cold Miller Lite every once in a while with some friends of mine, and I'd like right now, I'm going to say, hey, equivalent of two Miller Lights would be $10. I'll take $10 off my check. I'm going to ask Ed if he'll take 10 off of his check, send it to you, and get a damn haircut, Mosley.
let's continue to focus on Miller Lite here with great taste and only 96 calories. Miller Lite is brewed with beer lovers in mind. It's been the light beer with great taste since 1975. So next time you're getting ready to enjoy cold ones with your friends, go to MillerLite.com/doomsday to find delivery options near you, or you can pick up some Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell it. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Thank you, Stretch.
Have a great night, fellas.
Good to see you, buddy.
Okay.
See you guys.
And there he goes, Glenn Stretch Smith with his Stretch Plays. All right, there he is. And always fun to have Ed and Stretch together. And sometimes because of Ed's TV, we aren't able to do that. Able to do it tonight. And thanks again to Miller Lite for being a part of this. And Ed, before we get ready to finish up here, and I know you have something to really, I'm excited about you're going to end on. I was just sampling something, and this, you may hear more and more about this. Goodness steak seasoning. I said goodness steak seasoning. Put this on the tip of my tongue to just try it out. Ed, this is an amazing product. So, Ed, I don't know if you're much of a griller. I like to get on the grill. Like to get the green egg out, and I like to let some things broil and let it marinate. Sit out, marinate, and but I also every once in a while like to, even when I'm in a hurry. Tonight we did some burgers on the George Foreman grill. Still love a good George Foreman grill. This is the kind of seasoning that whether you're doing out there like on a grill or on the George Foreman can really take you to the next level. So Ed, I'm going to show you a little picture of that. See.
Okay. Goodness Steaks.
Yeah, Goodness.
Clever name.
Goodness Steak Seasoning. Ed, that's not a dime bag, but I think.
There goes that sponsorship.
No, I think that's fine. I think that's going to be good. All right, Ed, let's get ready to say goodnight, please, sir.
Okay.
We've covered this thing, 41-21. Cowboys win. They are the outright leaders now in the NFC East. I sort of half-jokingly called the NFC East over. You made a good point, though. Until Thanksgiving, Cowboys are going to play several teams that really, the Panthers look a lot better, and they're 3-0 right now. We don't exactly know. They hadn't really beaten anybody quite yet, but still, Cowboys have a chance to get hot here. And get this thing to 4-1 after five games. Ed, are you sensing that? I mean, I just don't. There's nobody else. There's nobody else in the NFC East. The Washington football team, pretty good defense, but they got beat again the other day. Giants are horrific.
They play horrible on defense. They're like ranked in the 20s and 30s in all of the important defensive categories. This is one of the most shocking things about the NFL.
We thought they were going to be good.
Weeks. Yeah. And then, you know, the Giants are the Giants under, you know, Joe Judge and Daniel Jones still turning the ball over, not winning football games. Just they're not competitive. It's hard to imagine them turning things around given how long they've been bad. And then the Cowboys demonstrated tonight their superiority over the Eagles, who might be the next best team.
Yeah, I think That really is. And so the Cowboys, in last year was so bad. The division was so bad, and the Cowboys remained in the race, even though they were horrible. And it really does look. I think what you're going to see this week, Ed, is that, and it started happening during this game. And I kind of started seeing it not only around Twitter. I started seeing it on ESPN, a lot of different places. I think more and more people are going to start buying into the Cowboys as contenders. And that's great for you with ESPN. That's great for this podcast. That's great for a lot of reasons. But for Mike McCarthy, who I think we thought if he didn't have a good season, he could get himself fired. I think right now, I mean, yeah, they could be 3-0 if they had taken advantage of those takeaways in week one. But I think given everything, they could have gone the other way. They could have lost that game to the Los Angeles Chargers. I think they're in pretty good position here.
Well, you talk about the game this week. I mean, you know, a lot of it's playing teams at the right time. And Carolina's coming in. They're undefeated. Sam Darnold has had a lot more success with Joe Barry, the new offensive coordinator with the Panthers, than he ever had in 3 years in New York. But he's lost Christian McCaffrey, the most unique running back in the entire league, to a hamstring pull. I was at the game in Houston when this happened. And they also lost J.C. Horn, their first-round pick, the corner the Cowboys wanted, instead of Micah Parsons. If they'd been allowed to choose between the two, I'm pretty sure they would have taken J.C. Horn. He's probably out for the year with a broken foot requiring surgery. So talk about getting a team at the right time. Yeah, the Panthers are undefeated. They lead the NFL in defense, but they're severely compromised in terms of being without their best offensive player and one of their most significant defensive players. So very timely opportunity for the Cowboys to play them in week four.
Yeah, and Cowboys are always a threat to either lose players to the protocol or get players back from it. We'll see. Just to Ed, I don't usually like to correct you, but so you won't get any tweets, it's Joe Brady. Obviously, you were thinking of Joe Barry, who is like a defensive coordinator for somebody.
With the Packers,
okay.
Who I covered last night.
That's okay. It.
My bad. Thanks for catching that. I appreciate that.
You bet. Somebody was going to tweet at you, and yeah, I didn't want that to turn into something.
I'm so easily offended.
That's right. Ed, any closing thoughts or are there any notes? Can you reach down there on the floor and grab a note?
I think I need to do that back on page one of the notes tonight. I couldn't choose between these two, so I'll let you tell me which one I should have gone with. All right, here it is. Dak Prescott is now 6-0 in games against quarterbacks who have fewer than 10 career starts. That's the third most wins without a loss since he was drafted in 2016, behind Tom Brady, who's 13-0 in those situations, and Patrick Mahomes, who's 10-0. So that's one pretty unique stat, I think. And then the other one is this. Dak Prescott, the second player in Cowboys history to complete at least 80% of his passes in consecutive games. Troy Aikman did it in the final two regular seasons of 1993 on his way to a Super Bowl championship.
Wow. Okay, I like both of those, but that second one with the way you did it and punctuated it with the Super Bowl and the fact that you were covering those Super Bowls for the morning news and various other outlets, that's exciting, Ed. So I would say of those two, that second one gets me going the most, okay? But that is interesting. Taking care of business against inexperienced quarterbacks, you got to take advantage of it. We've talked about that for years on the radio, Ed, when you'd come on with us every week when I was with Galloway or Kalishaw or whoever. We would talk about that. You know, this team, they get to face a backup quarterback or an inexperienced quarterback, and you got to take advantage of it. Cowboys do now have what you would call a veteran quarterback. And he's a very well-paid veteran quarterback, but he's also really good. And I love all these, like, mea culpas. Ed, I'm glad we don't really have to give one because we've always been pretty big fans of Dak and supportive of his work. But, you know, everybody feels like they've got to come out now, and I'm so sorry. He's a top five quarterback. I'm so sorry. Well, nobody cares. It's not like we all stopped the world because Dan Orlovsky said you weren't a top five quarterback. Our world has gone on. All right, Ed, you don't have to comment on that. Anytime I take any pokes at ESPN people, you can just kind of stay in your lane there.
I'll just chortle.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Ed, that was fun and good stuff. Good stuff from Glenn Stretch Smith. Who always brings a lot of energy. And on a Monday night, the Cowboys find a way to get it done, 41-21. Your best post-game show, really anywhere, and the best team podcast in the NFL is the Doomsday Podcast. We appreciate Mark Frito Friedman, the great work he does, putting all this together for us, the production work that he does. He's well-paid for it, but he does tremendous work. Frito Nation Productions. And then for Ed Werder, I am Matt Mosley. Good night from far North Dallas.
At Mayo Clinic in Florida, we are predicting the unpredictable. Our experts are using a patient's own anatomy to create 3D printed life-size organ models to map out challenges ahead of time, making complex surgeries more precise, efficient, and less invasive. We are making more possible at Mayo Clinic because every day we're doing what's never been done. Learn more at mayoclinic.org/possible. Mayo Clinic. You know where to go.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.